Radio 3.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's now 1 o'clock. Time for the news read by Vaughan Savage.
Two British servicemen have been killed in separate explosions in southern Afghanistan. The Ministry of Defence says a Royal Marine from 40 Commando died while on foot patrol in Sangin yesterday. A soldier from the Royal Dragoon Guards was killed in a blast this morning in the Nai Siraj district. Their families have been told. The total number of British service personnel killed since the Afghan campaign began in 2001 now stands at 320. At least 16 people have been killed in an attack on a convoy of buses and cars in northwest Pakistan, close to the Afghan border. The victims are all thought to be Shia Muslims. Suspected militants opened fire on the convoy, which was being escorted by security forces en route to the main northwestern city of Peshawar. Thousands of people have had their holidays cancelled following the collapse of a British tour operator. Gold Trail, which specialises in package holidays to Greece and Turkey, went into administration yesterday afternoon. Arrangements are being made to fly up to 16,000 Gold Trail customers back to the UK. An estimated 50,000 holidaymakers will be affected by the company's collapse over the summer. The television licence fee could be cut as part of the government's bid to drive down public spending. The Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, has attacked what he described as the BBC's extraordinary and outrageous waste. The BBC Trust, which represents the interests of licence fee payers, says the corporation remains focused on the need to secure maximum value for money. The BBC will begin negotiations for a new settlement next year. The world's oldest opera singer has died at the age of 98. Luo Pingchao was a star of Cantonese opera, a form of traditional Chinese theatre. He was ranked the world's oldest opera singer by the Guinness World Records. The weather, breezy, but with rain and showers dying out this afternoon and sunny spells developing. Overnight cloud and rain will spread across Northern Ireland, Wales, Western England and Western Scotland. Remaining areas will be dry with increasing cloud. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one.
And it was read by Vaughan Savage. Well, now the early music show, and as part of the BBC's year-long focus on opera, Lucy Skeeping presents this month's Baroque Opera Profile.
Welcome to the show, and if you haven't already guessed from the courtly style and typically French rhythms of this music, it's by the much-celebrated court composer Louis XIV, Jean-Baptiste Lully. It's the Overture to Armide, one of the great masterpieces of French Baroque opera, and the work we're going to be exploring all through today's programme. Armide was first heard in the Theatre of the Palais Royal in Paris in 1686. By now, Lully was at the height of his powers, master of music to Louis XIV, the Sun King, and although Italian-born, virtually the creator of French tragédie lyrique, tragic opera, of which Armide, some would say, is the greatest example. Certainly, it represents a wonderful integration of the arts of music, poetry, drama, dance, design, and by all accounts, spectacular stage effects. And it was the last great triumphant collaboration between Lully and his longtime librettist, Philippe Quinault, both of them by now in their 50s. Quinault had written his first play when he was 18 and had long since become one of the established artistic figures in the Paris of King Louis. Some compared his comedies with those of Molière, although it was probably with his tragedies that he really made his mark. His greatest heights, though, were reached in the many libretti he wrote for Lully. Between them, these two men created a new, deeply integrated, essentially French form of music drama, in which all the constituent elements reinforced each other, and with a narrative that really exploited the sentiments of the court of Louis XIV. But it wasn't simply the thrills and spills that made Armide from day one such a huge success. Lully also created a really magnificent score.
Les plaisirs en joie.
The Passacaglia from the last act of Lully's Armide, one of the most famous moments in French Baroque opera. A fortunate lover and his fellow troupe of plaisirs extol the virtues of amour in a sensual dance whose charms reduce the mighty soldier Renaud to a laid-back, loved-up jelly. The performers there were Gilles Ragon and Collegium Vocale with La Chapelle Royale, directed by Philippe Erivega. And it's their recording we'll be featuring throughout the programme. To discuss Armide, its place in the world of French Baroque opera and its significance today, I had a chat with Hugo Rein, who's performed and worked on several of Lully's operas with his group La Symphonie du Marais.
You have a lot of opera by Lully not known at all today. So there is a lot of work to do to really know the music of this composer. And the music of this composer, of Lully, is really different if you take the Armide, the last work, and if you take a ballet of the first period. I have to remember to the public that Lully is dead 1 year after Armide in 1687. And it's very early, in fact, if you think that Bach was 2 years old, Lully was really before the others. If we speak about the period of the Baroque of beginning of 18th century, Handel, Telemann, Bach, Vivaldi, Lully was really before these people, and he constructed a lot of forms and a lot of music that these people, the Handel and others, take. And also Purcell, even Purcell at the same time. So Lully have a great influence in all the Europe, I think. And it's difficult today to imagine this because the music of Lully is not so much played.
Hugo Rein. With Armide, Lully and Quinault aim to recreate the style of theatre of the classical world, which was felt in those days to be the absolute ideal. It was, in fact, very close to what Italian opera had been at its birth, with musical declamations based on the natural rhythms of the spoken word, as was believed was done in ancient times. But while Italy was now moving away from this, modernising its operas to include lengthy arias, which could sometimes hold up the action, in France, the tragédie lyrique continued to remain true to the ancient ideals, with a musical structure that was both rich and free. Quinault's libretto was taken from Jerusalem Liberata, a poem by Tasso that had really fascinated the imagination of the entire 17th century in paintings as well as theatre. And its range of emotions and situations, combining love, war, honour and magic, made it the perfect subject for a Baroque tragedy. It's the love story of the sorceress Armide and the Christian knight Renaud. At war with the Crusaders, Armide ensnares her enemy, Renaud, with her magic spells. But at the moment she raises her dagger to kill him, she finds herself falling in love with him. She casts a spell to make him fall in love with her in return. But two of his fellow soldiers find their way to Renaud and break her spell. Renaud escapes and Armide is left in enraged despair. That's the outline of the story then, but of course no French opera of this period, least of all by the royal favourite Lully, was complete without a healthy dose of flattery for the king. And so the five acts of Armide are prefaced with a prologue, a sung dialogue between Glory, who holds the upper hand in war, and Wisdom, who dominates in peacetime. Direct references to the character of Louis XIV, which would undoubtedly have been picked up by the audience. In fact, Louis's influence on the work is very clear throughout, notably in its use of dance. Louis was very nimble on his feet, and so dancing played a far more important role in French opera than it did in Italian. And dancing wasn't just used for ornament and spectacle. It was actually part of the architecture of the whole opera, moving the story on by evoking, perhaps in an unspoken way, thoughts and sentiments that were crucial to the narrative. This excerpt towards the end of Act One is a good example. We're in Armide's palace, and in a lilting saraband, the courtiers sing and dance to celebrate her victory over the Crusaders. All the universe resounds to her glory, they sing. Our enemies are enfeebled and confounded. Suddenly, they're interrupted by the bloody entrance of the wounded Arontes, who announces to everyone's dismay that the captives have escaped, rescued by one single warrior, the bravest of them all, Renaud.
Mm-hmm.
Dances in celebration of Armide's victory, interrupted with news that her prisoners have escaped, rescued by the great Christian warrior Renaud. That sort of integration of dance within the plot of the opera was typical of the dramatic and effective way that Lully and his librettist Quinault shaped their scenes when they worked together on Armide, as Hugo Rein explained to me.
The work between Lully and Quinault, the librettist, they work a lot to have a perfect prosody, a perfect language in music. We don't know exactly how they work together, but we know that first Quinault proposed some librettos to the king, and after the king chose one libretto, and after Quinault read publicly the libretto, and sometimes also Louis XIV corrects some things, and after this, Lully probably corrects the Quinault libretto, because when he composed, he cut some things or he asked Quinault to add something. In every opera by Lully, the women are very important. Here it's Armide, of course. He don't choose to call the opera Renaud, for example, but Armide. I think if you enter in the relationship between the different character of this opera, between, of course, the man Renaud and the woman Armide, you will be touched by the poetry and the modernity of the language.
A notable quality of Lully's operas, especially the late ones, is the way he managed to penetrate the emotional depths of his characters to help his audience really understand their true motivation. Sometimes he did this by creating extra scenes that weren't part of the original source material at all, like, for instance, the Sommeil, where a character would lapse into a drowsy state and reveal his true colours. These sommeil, or sleep scenes, tended to follow quite a formal plan. A gentle, lazy prelude for, say, woodwind or strings, followed by singing that might involve one of the great classical deities of sleep, such as Morpheus. They were an innovation of Lully's and featured in several of his stage works, but the one in Act Two of Armide is certainly one of his finest. Using her magic, Armide has enticed Renaud away from the safety of his fellow soldiers, and he now finds himself on a pleasant island. Gradually, he's lulled to sleep by bewitching sounds, recorders and muted strings that paint the sound of a flowing river. "The sweetest flowers and most gentle zephyrs perfume the air I breathe," he sings as he slips into an almost hypnotic state. "I can scarcely hold off sleep's charms." A brave hero he may be, but he's also capable of responding to all the many facets of love. And as he succumbs to sleep, demons surround him, disguised as naiads, as nymphs and shepherds, singing of the pleasures of love. Ah, what delusion, what a folly not to enjoy life.
Thank you.
The Slumber Scene from Lully's Armide in the recording by Philip Erivega. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're exploring what's considered to be one of Lully's masterpieces, his last opera, Armide. Well, now we come to the central drama in the work, a scene that shows Lully's truly original approach to setting Kino's words to music. He may have been Italian by birth, but Lully had an instinctive ear for the rhythms and colours of the words, especially when it came to his recitatives, the musical speeches, if you like. And finding exactly the right words to express the emotion of the moment was very important for both Lully and Kino.
They work a lot on the Kino and Lully on the recitative, and one of the best recitative is in Armide, the famous Enfin il est en ma puissance. Later, Rameau and Gluck also admire this recitative. The recitative is not easy to play because it means then you have to ask to the singer to don't sing but to speak. And it is always difficult for a singer today. So there is a lot of work to do again and again with this French recitative. To work on this, you have to work on every word. Of course, if you have to understand every word. And also the basso continuo, the bass continuo, have to react to every sentiment. In Lully, what is difficult is that the aria are very short, you know. Very, very short. So it's really beautiful when you have a recitative speaking before and suddenly you have the beautiful aria.
Of course, Hugo Rein accepts that it can be hard for non-French speakers to really grasp the brilliant way that Lully set Kino's words to his recitatives. But with such powerful, descriptive music, I think even the most linguistically challenged of us can feel the magic. This is the famous recitative from the end of Act Two Hugo referred to, just after Renaud has fallen into his deep sleep. Armide, the sorceress, now stands over her defenceless foe, dagger in hand. At last he's in my power, this mortal enemy, this proud conqueror. Sleep's charm delivers him to my revenge. I will pierce his invincible heart.
Thank you.
We'll meet Laurent as the vengeful Armide in the final part of Act Two. Now the mood changes. Armide finds herself unable, even unwilling, to murder the sleeping Renaud. "What confusion seizes me, what makes me hesitate," she sings. His good looks are just too much for her. She herself has fallen in love with him. Ah, what cruelty it would be to take his life. It's certainly an awful dilemma. She knows Renaud's love comes purely as a result of her magic. But can he really fall in love with her in an honest way? Feeling vulnerable, Armide summons up help from the depths of hell. "Come, implacable hate, and save me from love. Restore my fury." Hate, Armide calls to the depths of hell as she finds herself overcome by the power of love. But Armide's passion for the handsome Renaud is just too strong to resist. Stop, stop, fearsome hate. I renounce your help. If you continue to tear out love, you will tear out my heart. Needless to say, hate, just getting into his stride, is furious with this change of plan. Follow love, then, if you wish to, he sings, but you will regret it. If you ever call me back, you shall wait in vain. I can punish you with no harsher pain than to abandon you to love forever. Armide's inner battle against the desperate love she feels for Renaud, the climax to Act 3 of Lully's tragedy lyrique Armide. And so, in Lully and Kino's plot, the unhappy Armide is left with the realisation that while her love for her enemy is the real thing, his feelings for her are, in a way, false, the result of her own magic spells. It's a hopeless situation, and the opera can only end in tragedy. Before the end, though, composer and librettist indulge in a great scene of luxurious bliss, the only real love scene in the opera, in fact. And this is where the music of the Passacaglia that we heard earlier comes in. But there's trouble afoot. Two of Renaud's knights find their way into Armide's palace, bearing a golden sceptre. It has the power to break Armide's magic. Renaud is released from his enchantment and returns to his duties as a soldier, while Armide sings of her despair in a final dramatic solo scene in which Lully seamlessly combines lyrical moments of aria with dramatic recitative. Lully's impact on French opera is incalculable, in fact, on opera as a whole. His powers of innovation were unsurpassed in his time, and Armide represents a sort of culmination in his whole output. Ugo Rehn again.
The innovation, I think, is in architecture of the opera. This is one of the more beautiful aspect of Lully's work. It's how he used an idea and how he developed an idea into an opera. For example, also in the chorus, he used the chorus not only like a group of people. Sometimes it's only 10 chorists and sometimes it's only 4. Always the chorus is different. In Armide, you have this big accompaniment with all the string orchestra. This gives energy to the character. And also, we have to remember that innovation by Lully was also to create the orchestra, because he brings the trumpet and the timpanis from the music for military things. He brings together all the different corporation of musicians, for example, the musician of the chapel, who was more strings, the musician of the opener music, La Grande Écurie, who are more wind instruments, and he brings all these people together to create his own orchestra. What is important also, he have a big orchestra. But what is more important, it's probably, and this was the beginning of our discussion, what is in the libretto inside, what the Kino and probably Lully put in the libretto for the different character, different psychology of the different character. And this is the modernity of Lully also, because for me, each character has a great psychology.
So gradually, we are beginning to get a better understanding of these operas, of how they were performed, both music and visual effects, and even more importantly, perhaps, the layers of meaning and significance hidden beneath. And these wonderful works that operate on so many levels are finally starting to become more familiar in the opera houses of today. I'll leave you with Armide herself in the final moments from this great and bold opera that bears her name.
Thank you.
final moments from Lully's opera Armide, with Guillemette Laurence in the title role and the Collegium Vocale and La Chapelle Royale, directed by Philippe Hervécher. Today's early music show featured the French music director Hugo Rennes, and it was presented by Lucy Skeeping. The producer was Chris Wines.
As the BBC proms season continues, the audience at the Royal Albert Hall casts its gaze on a single performer. Celebrating Chopin's 200th birthday, Maria João Pires plays a selection of his nocturnes for solo piano. A late-night performance of Chopin Nocturnes. Maria João Pires in the BBC Proms on Wednesday at 10 o'clock, only on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to the Saturday afternoon, just gone 2 o'clock, and now a second chance to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert from Wigmore Hall. It's introduced by Fiona Talkington.
Nearly 150 years separate the two works in today's lunchtime concert, a quartet by Haydn and a quintet by Shostakovich. The Czech Pavel Haas Quartet, former Radio 3 New Generation artists, team up with a current New Generation artist, the Georgian pianist Katia Bunyatishvili, in the Shostakovich. Katia giving her first London concert, by the way. But the quartet begins with Haydn's Opus 76, No. 2 in D minor. It's known as the Fifths Quartet because Haydn makes frequent use of the interval. On the face of it, the first movement seems quite serious, but by the second, slow movement, things are much more amiable, and then the minuet has its own title, the Witch's Minuet, the players battling with a relentless canon, D minor giving way to D major in the rather eerie trio section. But it's Haydn's wry sense of humour which has the last word in the final movement. The Pavel Haas Quartet really like playing this piece. People think it's serious, they said to me earlier on, but we think it's so funny and wild, with accents all over the place, and it's full of musical jokes. And here are the members of the quartet, the violinists Veronika Jaroshkova and Eva Karova, the viola player Pavel Nickel, and the cellist Peter Jaroszek to play Haydn's String Quartet, Opus 76, No. 2 in D minor.
Thank you.